Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey there, welcome to the Dr. Nina Show. I'm Dr. Nina Savelle Rockland, and I am here to help you break free of the diet trap and lose weight without dieting. That means no more counting calories or carbs, no more thinking about food all the time. It really is possible to lose weight and gain health, all without ever going on another diet. You know why? Because it's not what you're eating that's the real problem. It is what's eating at you. So today's topic is self-acceptance, and we're going to talk about how that ties into food, weight, and body image issues and conflicts. And I have a guest with me today, therapist Ali Spots-DeLazer. I think you're going to really be inspired by her, and you're going to love the self-acceptance movement that she has created. So we'll be talking to Ali in a moment, but first, when you think of self-acceptance, what comes to mind? Now, I think it's worth defining, because when you say self, quote-unquote self, different people think it means different things. Now, to me, self-acceptance means being perfectly imperfect and accepting those imperfections. It means accepting yourself unconditionally, no matter what flaws may exist. So keep in mind, and this is so important, when I talk about the self, I am not just talking about the person you see in the mirror. Yourself is not your body, and your body is not yourself. But, you know, I have discovered that lots of people really think of their bodies as themselves. In fact, I once met someone who described herself as the queen of self-care. The queen of self-care. So she said she got facials every month, had got her nails done, got her hair blown out, did everything possible that you can do. I think she got, like, you know, massages, everything. And she said she could not understand why she felt so bad when, according to her, she was taking such good care of herself. So I told her, well, your worship, no, I'm kidding. I didn't even say that. I just thought it. I told her, look, you are taking good care of your body, queen of self-care, but that is not self-care. That is grooming. Our appearance is not the barometer of our self-worth. We have bodies, but that doesn't define us. We also have minds, souls, intellectual parts, emotional parts, relational, creative, even spiritual parts. And when I talk about this, people often say, yeah, yeah, I know, I'm a good person, blah, 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 but it doesn't help me feel better about myself. I'll feel better when I lose weight. So I ask them, do you love your friends because they're so thin? Would you like them better if they lost weight? And they always look horrified, and they're like, no, of course not, that would be ridiculous. Right, nobody has ever said they would like their friends better if they just dropped a few pounds. You love your friends because they're nice, fun, funny, supportive, warm, great, wonderful people. And so are you. And so when you give all aspects of yourself equal weight, so to speak, you will feel better about yourself. And when you feel better, you're less likely to use food for comfort, for numbing, or for distraction. When you accept yourself also, you're more likely to imagine that other people accept you too. And that brings me to our guest today, Ali Spots-DeLazer, who is all about self-acceptance. And she has created an incredible self-acceptance movement. So let me tell you a little bit about Ali. She's a licensed marriage and family therapist, a licensed professional clinical counselor with a private practice here in Los Angeles, where she specializes in eating disorders. Her articles have been published in The Therapist, Family Therapy Magazine, Psychotherapy Networker, Practice Innovations, which is a journal of the American Psychological Association, and various online resources such as Eating Disorder Hope, Recovery Warriors, and more. She's presented workshops at training facilities, graduate schools, hospitals, and both national and international conferences. Ali serves as co-chair of both the Advocacy and Communications Committee for the Academy for Eating Disorders and the Communications Committee for the International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals. This year, she received the Member of the Year Award from the International Association for Eating Disorder Professionals. Wow, impressive, Ali. She is also the creator of hashtag Shake It for Self-Acceptance, a movement that is sparking important conversations about body, soul, and self-acceptance through inspiration and flash mob fun. Welcome, Ali.
Thank you so much, Nina. Thank you for having me as a guest today.
Oh, it is my pleasure. I'm so excited. You're the first guest on the Dr. Nina Show, so yay!
Yay! And by the way, I will trim my bio. Thank you.
No. Do not trim your bio. You should lead with, you know, how amazing you are. Why cut back on that? Own it.
Right on.
So, Ali, tell me what inspired you to create the Shake It movement.
It was actually kind of interesting. I'll go back a little bit in time. I used to go to these mental health events, and I remember thinking, wow, man, this is heavy, or this is scary. Like, the statistics, I would see people stop and want to take things in and then literally walk away. And I never quite figured out what that was about, but it stood out. Cut to about almost four years ago, three of us went to this cause-driven flash mob. And it was a super intense topic, but during those 4 minutes that we were all dancing, people of all shapes, sizes, races, ethnicities, genders, that people spoke various languages. For those 4 minutes, we all spoke one language, and that was dance. We all felt one, like you could just feel this electric joy. Even though it was a super intense topic, we also could take in the topic because it was balanced with that joy.
That sounds amazing. Can you maybe explain what a flash mob dance is for those of us who may not? I mean, I know now, but
right on,
yeah. What is a flash mob dance?
You know, traditionally a flash mob is, I actually had to look this up and make sure I wasn't being, you know, false advertising by calling this a flash mob. Originally, they started off with like one person dancing and then surprising the bystanders at some public space where one person would start, then it would build and build and build and build till you're watching this amazing flash mob. They've done it with orchestras, with dancers, with singers. I just think they're so awesome. Like, if life could be a musical, I'd be really happy. So this is my way of making life a little bit of a musical.
And you have done it for all the participants as well.
So that's what a flash mob is. What we created was, we put together the first event, which was a lot of inspiring speeches. See, I took the idea of, okay, here's this flash mob. Now, how do we shift that old heaviness and see if people can learn and be present and get help from fun, from positivity, from inspiration? I just thought, let's see if we can remove some stigma and have some fun. And I gotta say, it's been such a joy. I don't have researchers to give me data, but I have testimonials, I have calls, I have feedback. I have first year somewhere around 80 to 90 dancers showing up when we thought it was going to rain, being like, I'm cool, it's okay, I'll put my jacket in a bin, let's go.
Yeah, I think you really tapped into something joyful that's missing from so many people's lives, you know, to bond with other people and have this shared experience and just be light. As you say, it's the antithesis of this heavy kind of message is, hey, let's be light and let's be human and dance and accept however you dance. You don't have to
yes.
be a Broadway star.
Oh my gosh, no. In fact, like, my thing is, change the step. If it hurts you, change the step. If you don't get it, change it. Just be present, have joy. This is, like, this year I know we're doing a halftime show, but I don't see it as a show. I see it as a showing of diversity, unity, community, joy, self-acceptance. That's what it is. And I'm so excited to get conversation started through that way. And we also have this custom song, which, going back to the flash mob piece, you can't help but kind of think about self-acceptance. This beautiful young band, Auburn Road, wrote the song for the movement, and it's called I'm Original. They're a country band, and they did the dance.
Incredible! It's an incredible song. I mean, it's like an anthem of self acceptance everywhere. And it anyone who listens to it will be inspired, no matter who you are, no matter what gender you are,
yeah,
no matter how old you are, no matter what you weigh. It will make you dance.
It does. So that's. That's kind of where the inspiration came from, and we're going on year number 3 right now. We've been all over the U.S. I mean, we've been to many locations in the U.S., including the Capitol Hill, or the U.S. Capitol building, the grounds in front of it was phenomenally powerful to make a statement about self-acceptance there.
Yeah, I think you can go with, we danced at Capitol Hill. I think that dancing outside on the grounds, that counts.
I self-accept I'm a detail monster.
So, okay, I have a question.
Yes.
So hashtag shake it. Tell me what does shake it mean?
You know, so shake it. I would imagine that for many of us, including us listeners right now, I would imagine what comes up is shake something naughty. And I like that. I don't mind that, because if that gets your attention, awesome. And because we're dancing, we are shaking any parts of our bodies that move when we dance. So that means all of us. But what it really means, and why this really was created, was to shake things up, shake things out, just shake things up in regards to moving toward self-acceptance, greater self-acceptance, because that's what's going to really shake up the norm. It's not the way our society's built right now. So that's what shake it for self-acceptance means.
I love that. Shake it up and shake it out.
Uh-huh. Hmm. We have to skip shake it off because somebody just trademarked.
Oh, well, we won't even say that. We didn't say anything. They won't come after
us.
So I have one. I'm going to ask Allie one more question, and then I'm going to open it up to the callers. But so, Allie, what do you want people to know most about self-acceptance?
What I think is really important about self-acceptance, in viewing self-acceptance, and this may be different than the answer that you might feel is coming, discussions about self-acceptance, I believe, are early interventions. Because when we start to look at our self-acceptance, what's in the way, the obstacles, what's working, we can shore up an anchor about who we are and how we walk through this world, no matter what comes at us, whether it's prejudice, whether it's stigma, whether it's bullying, oppression. So if we have an anchor of what we already know and accept and are good with about ourselves, enough with about ourselves, I think it helps us to walk through the many, many bumps. The other piece is, regarding early intervention, if we're looking at obstacles, this may be one of the earliest times that we can get in there before really big body issues come in, before really big dieting issues come in. I mean, dare I say, sometimes we're dieting and we don't even realize it's shifted into an eating disorder because we still think it's healthy. There's nothing in our brain that goes, hey, you've passed health. You are now sick. You still think it's healthy. So I think that if we're just talking about, not just talking about, we've all got to take that word out of our language, I believe. If we are talking about self-acceptance, then we are getting close to being able to address things that might be in the way. Now, big kind of thing that I want to address about self-acceptance is, please don't think I'm talking about like falling asleep in your mashed potatoes. I'm awesome. I love myself. Pet, 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 pet.
I'm not complacency.
No, I'm not.
No.
A little passionate.
Passionate is good.
I really am talking about being able to embrace. As you said earlier, I loved it. You said, it's not the person in the mirror. The embracing, the mind, the soul, the intellectual parts, you named all these different parts. That's what it's about. Being familiar with, even if you're not comfortable with all those parts, at least labeling them, knowing them.
And by the way, if we're going to talk about appearance, although appearance is what originally maybe attracts us to each other, if the person is not a good person, I remember, before I met my fabulous husband, David.
He is
love
fabulous.
You, David. but I digress. Okay, before I met my fabulous husband, David, I dated a guy who looked like JFK Jr., like dead ringer for JFK Jr. We would go out, and people would look at him and not me. That's how cute he was. That's how gorgeous he was. I was just like, what's this? But you know what? He was kind of boring, and I didn't like his values, and he started to look less good to me. And so he started off being like, ooh, JFK Jr., yowza. And he ended up being like, yeah, no.
But haven't you met more people in your life where they strike you, like there's just this part that you respond to on a physical level, and then you get to know their soul. And
they're beautiful, or they're awful.
Or they really loot, like you're like, wow, how did I ever find them to be drawing me closer to them? Because I want to push them away.
That's exactly right. And that's why we have to, accept the totality of who we are internally and accept that we're human and, you know, we're here to enjoy life and be a good person and help other people. And yes, good to each other. So I love your message. And I'm going to open it up to callers. If anyone would like to speak with Allie, the call-in number is 818-602-4929. That's 818-602-4929. Any questions you have about self-acceptance or any comments, we would love to hear from you. So, if not early intervention, and that's certainly with a 9-year-old daughter, and I see even this early how these sort of body image issues start early, and it's very, very disturbing. So if we're 49 or 39 or 29 or 79, what can we do to increase our sense of self-acceptance?
Well, I think there's three things that really stand out to me. And the first is actually not about increasing our own. It's about increasing our... we have a caller.
We have a caller.
Stand by and hold on that one, because I think that's important.
Okay. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina. Who's this?
This is Nick.
Hi, Nick.
Was that your? It was on Third Street, right? Is that where we have the
Yes, Nick. Dance? I just got chills. I'm so excited you were there.
Yeah, I was at the first two, and it was really nice. I mean, the dancers they were young, and they were great, and it had a lot of energy. And I really enjoyed going, and I'll probably go to the third one.
Oh, thank you.
But what I was thinking about it is that I think it relates to the same thing. I went away this summer for a couple of days, and there was music going on, and I ended up dancing, which I hadn't done in a long time, and it was great. I did it for a long time. The energy was great, and I felt like I was doing something really good with my body. And I went home, and I need to exercise, and I just can't get myself up to exercise.
Well, why do you need to exercise?
I love the dancing, can't get going and dance.
Yeah, well, I'm wondering, right now I hear two different things. One is that I love to dance, and the other is I've got to exercise.
Yes.
And I think that's probably what's in the way is... allowing yourself to do what you love versus have to.
Nick, go take a dance class.
Yeah. Come dance at the next Shake It, actually, Nick.
It's kind of funny. I mean to say that, you know, if I take a dance class, where do I go, to a gym?
You know what? It depends on what... Actually, this is awesome. It depends on what kind of dance you like. If you like partner dancing, there's tons of places that have wonderful I think it's called Zumba and Salsa and the more of that type of dancing. There's the... I don't know if I can name all the different studios online, but I can tell you that there are studios... There's this studio that takes fitness or that takes dance and puts it into fitness classes so that they're actually dance classes but with the fitness edge. There's tons of options, and they welcome all skills, all styles, all sizes. I am happy to give you some ideas offline if you want to email me. Or email Nina, and I can give you some ideas. I don't know where you're located, but I know in the Valley there's a few places. You can check them out. I can't endorse any per se, but I can sure give you you some to look at, and I think you might find a home because it's fun.
Yeah, when you're having fun, when you're dancing and you're having fun and you enjoy it, as Ali said, there's a big difference between I love dancing and I have to exercise.
Yeah.
So,
you know, Nick, I can tell you, I actually quit exercising because I hate exercising.
I exercise, the worst.
But you know what? I love dancing and I love hiking. I love how it feels. I love what I see. I love the community of both. And so I do those. And if I notice I'm feeling a little down in life, sometimes I look at my calendar and I go, oh, I haven't done anything I love lately that involves movement. Because movement releases chemicals in our brain that make us feel good.
That sounds great. That's great advice. Also, real quickly, because I'm sort of out of college here, I drive for Uber or for Lyft. And I listen to an oldie station I found on AM, and it's no commercials, and it's all oldies, and it just gets me through the day so well because I'm listening to old songs, and I always love music and this and that. That would be perfect for me.
There's an approach to therapy that says, what's working? Do more of it.
That should be an approach to all therapies.
Yeah.
Right? And that's part of self-acceptance, right? You want to accept what you don't like, but accept and nurture what you do like about yourself and feed your soul.
And it sounds like music and dance feeds your soul and is not a have-to. It's a get-to. I get to.
All right. Thank you so much, and I'll see you on Thursday.
Thanks for calling in, Nick.
Bye, Nick. Thanks for calling.
Bye. Okay, bye.
Okay, so are we back to the topic?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the first one I think is really important about approaches to how do we increase self-acceptance. First one's a gift to your friends, and that is I challenge everyone out there, take one day, one week to not say, you look great. Take one week to tell your friends, your family, why you think they are great.
That's powerful.
That, I think, will change your own feeling of self-acceptance, too. Number two, how we speak to ourselves. I think that if we can ask ourselves, would I say this to someone I love? That voice, I mean, our thoughts sound like a voice. I'm not talking about like being possessed or anything. I'm talking about our thoughts are like a voice. So when it's speaking to us in ways, would we say that to somebody we love?
Yeah, that when I actually spoke about this on my first show where that wonderful quote, if you spoke to your friends the way you speak to your body, ooh, you'd have no friends left.
And I'm even talking the mind when you say, oh, I'm dumb, I'm so stupid, I screwed up again. What? Would you say that to someone that you love? I think if you can bring a bit more self-compassion into your own self-talk, it helps you to accept those parts of you that are a little rougher to accept.
Yeah, we really need to turn our inner critics into a friend, because otherwise you could be turning to food just to get away from your own mean voice.
Now that leads me to my point three, which on my map to self-acceptance, I think these are really helpful. And this one is about getting familiar with the unique ingredients that make up you. And that would be your internal traits, your values, because we're all, like, body-wise, we're all kind of similar, really, when you get down to it. But when it comes to our inner structure, we are so unique. There is not another one of us that thinks and presents and metabolizes things in the way that we do. And with that, once you learn the labels, and there may be people out there right now who are going, oh, I don't want to, I'm controlling, I'm jealous. Well, I want to introduce an idea. Years ago, I worked for Carolyn Costin, and she had this concept about things having a light and a dark to them. I have been fleshing this out for years because there's a good and a bad. Nothing's all good and nothing's all bad. Controlling. Okay, if you're calling yourself controlling and looking at it as negative, well, doesn't that also mean that you may have an intense, wonderful ability to organize?
Yeah.
If you're calling yourself jealous, doesn't that also mean that you actually are very clear about what you want? So can't you use that as inspiration?
I love that. It's so powerful.
Well, and then I'm going to go to something that's personal, that people go, oh my gosh, persistence is such a great trait. There's even that Calvin Coolidge about nothing in the place can take the place of persistence. We kind of honor this trait. Well, I'm going to say I used to have an eating disorder, and my persistence kept me really sick for a long time. Now my persistence gets things like Shake It created. Now my persistence gets articles written, gets me to show up here when I was totally nervous today.
Oh, it's just you and me talking, Allie.
I know. But what I'm saying is traits have, if you look at yourself and you put together this ingredient list, I really invite and ask you to look for how does it help you and how does it get in your way? And get comfortable with both of them. There's always room to change, learn about, get familiar with, get some help if you can't do it yourself. But get familiar and comfortable even with the dark stuff, because you know what? It makes you interesting.
Yes. Everyone is trying to, not everyone, many people are trying to be perfect.
Right.
Whatever that is. It doesn't exist. What makes people interesting lies outside of the lines.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh, really, really good stuff. I love the light and the dark, although I don't know that I want it, would call it dark. But
yeah.
the shading,
stuff,
yeah.
I think it's the stuff that really supports our lives, and then the stuff that gets in the could get in the way, depending on how we look at it. And that's what we got to shift, is how we look at it.
Because perception is reality.
Exactly.
Right? We could drive. I often say, like, you could drive down, we're in LA, so you could drive down the 405 from where we are to LAX, and you could say, hey, LA drivers are horrible. And you know what? They would be horrible. People will cut you off and flip you off. And yeah. Oh, you've been there too.
Yeah.
Or you could say, you know, LA drivers have a bad reputation. They're actually very nice. And you could drive the same freeway at the same time, and people will let you in. They'll wave to you. They'll be nice. Now, which is true? Both are true. It's right. What do you want to focus on?
And you know what? In our society, I believe that we actually have to look for that perception, that perceptivity that you're talking about. There's a $60 billion dieting and weight loss industry coming at us. There's marketing that's telling us, if we just change this, we'll feel really good about ourselves. We have a lot coming at us that says, you're not enough and you're not okay. So I think you're right. We actually have to practice that neuroplasticity and let our brain get used to seeing the balance, the good.
And neuroplasticity is a fabulous way of saying we can learn new stuff.
What she said.
Okay, so, Allie, what do you think are the biggest misconceptions about self-acceptance?
Misconceptions. I think that, and I'm going to be interested to hear what you think about this, too. One of them is that it's arrogant. That it's somehow boisterous or obnoxious. And again, I'm not talking about walking around being like, I am the greatest, step aside. I'm not talking about losing humanity. I'm not talking about cutting in front of other people because you've accepted yourself in line. I'm talking about just being a human being that is aware of and familiar with and actually shook hands with the many parts of themselves. We were talking about the complacency piece. I've heard people get really scared of, if I'm more okay with myself, I'm afraid I'm going to stop changing and trying to better myself. I've never seen that happen.
Yes, castigating yourself, beating yourself up, and criticizing yourself is not actually motivating. People think, oh, that's how I motivate myself, right? By being mean. But you would never motivate someone else, getting back to, you know, what you were saying earlier, how do you treat other people? You would never motivate your friend by saying, but the friend says, I really want to go to law school. You wouldn't say, like, yeah, you piece of shit, you better get your ass to law school. Whoops,
right.
I'm very profane today.
I usually
Hopefully
am.
Nobody minds. You know, what do you think? You think you can go to law school? Who do you think you are? No,
right.
You'd say, awesome, I think you can do it. What do we need? How can I help you? But we motivate other people by encouraging them, and some people think they're motivating themselves by discouraging themselves.
Right, exactly. So let me see. I actually had a note about this, but I think those, for me, those are probably the two biggest things. And then this kind of brings me, my grandma used to have this saying, and I have no idea where it came from. Did she make it up? Whatever it is. I'm going to say this. Self-acceptance does not mean that you get to fall asleep in your mashed potatoes. It means that you get to know you, your inner qualities, your thoughts, your ways of being. You don't judge them. You just greet and you get to know and accept you. That's the clarity that I think I'd like to offer today, right here, right now. And thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that that's a lovely way to put it, and I think will resonate with a lot of people. If anyone would like to talk with Allie or with me or with both of us, the number is 818-602-4929.
Nina, can I ask you, what do you personally, what do you find to be the biggest obstacles for people regarding self-acceptance? And I'm not saying self-esteem. I'm not saying we have to split out the words. They're different words, even if they might be seen as synonyms at times.
I think the biggest obstacle is that people, whether raised by parents or had bad experiences with parents or teachers or someone in their lives that did not, facilitate the growth of self-esteem, they internalize it, and they see themselves through the eyes of those people. And that doesn't mean, like, bad parents. I don't believe in blaming is my parents didn't do this and it's their fault that I'm fill in the blank.
Right.
Explaining is, look, these are the circumstances of my childhood. This is how it affected me, and I need to understand this in the service of change. So the biggest obstacle for self-esteem is to see themselves through, let me go a step further, the interpretation, their child's interpretation of their circumstances.
Right.
So, like if mom suffers from headaches and has to go lie down all the time, as a child, you don't have the wherewithal to say, oh, mom's suffering from headaches and she's got to rest. Children are egocentric. So they say, wow, mom would rather go lie down in her room than be with me. And then they make an interpretation. I must be not worth it. I must be too much. I must be not enough.
Right.
And they carry that with them into adulthood so this interpretation of certain things that happened to them,
how they made it make sense,
becomes their identity. And that's what I see. So what was relational or what was your interpretation of what was going on becomes who you are.
I had actually talked to a friend, and I just, because she's such a wise woman, and I had said, what do you think is an obstacle for self-acceptance? She said insecurities. And I think in a loose way, that's what you're talking about, is the origin of where they came to become interpretations that became insecurities. And if you can unpack them, understand them, look at them, awareness to insight about them, you have a choice whether or not you want to agree with them.
Exactly. And you've got to understand where they come from, because otherwise you cannot get rid of them. If you just say to someone, oh, you have no reason to be insecure, but look at all these wonderful things about you, that's just not going to get you anywhere. You can't talk yourself into thinking differently, and you can't talk yourself out of it unless you can't shake it out unless you know where it comes from. And so when you know where it comes from, then you can challenge it. Oh, I see. Mom had headaches, and that meant this to me. And I need to sort of recalibrate my sense of my history and therefore my sense of self.
Right, right.
There was something else that you mentioned. People think self-acceptance is arrogant. And it's something that I hear a lot are people who feel selfish.
Yes.
When it has anything to do with them. So they're either selfless, which is, oh, I have no needs. I'm just here to meet your needs, right?
Right.
I'm selfless. And
I'm here to serve.
I'm here to serve. An empty vessel cannot serve. I'm here to serve. Or they say, oh, I'm going to be selfish. It's all going to be about me. And I can't have that. I mean, that would be terrible. So either selflessness or selfishness, and I introduce the idea of self-care,
yes,
which is balancing the needs of yourself with the needs of others. And sometimes you have to pick yourself. That's self-care.
You know, kind of riffing off of that, I look at, you know, well, we're kind of on the string of self words. I hear that selfish dilemma a lot with something that I balance with self-protection. Mm. Sometimes I may be called selfish. Let's say, I mean, this. Hey, we're on internet radio, so I'm going to say this. Let's say you're on a date, and you don't want the person that you're on the date with to touch you in certain places. And they do. And your response is stop, no. Well, they may see you as selfish, but you probably see yourself as self-protective.
Yes, if you can stay with yourself, because a lot of people give up their view of what's going on to think about the other person.
Right.
Why did that? I don't want to make that person mad.
Right.
I don't want to upset that person.
And that's where I'm going with sometimes the feedback we get if someone's calling us selfish is, again, if you kind of tease it out and look at it, it may not be as charged or as true as it feels, because sometimes self-protection needs to happen and it will tick off the other person. Okay.
Yeah, I like the idea of self-care as self-protection.
Yeah.
That just defines it a little better, because that's what it is.
It's boundaries.
It's protecting yourself.
Yeah. It's accepting and knowing yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And being okay, knowing you have some lines that you don't want crossed. It's okay.
And that it's okay to think about your well-being instead of abdicating that, giving yourself up for the other person. So especially women, I find that they give themselves up to take care of the other. And they empty themselves out. And when you're empty...
Many caring souls do that, yeah.
And when you're empty, you're also vulnerable to filling up symbolically with food.
Right. And this also weaves back, just so we're not going off on this tangent, this weaves back into self-acceptance, because, again, my concept of self-acceptance is knowing and accepting the parts of self. So all of this weaves in.
Except there are no tangents in radio or therapy. It's free association.
That's true.
So, you know, what surprised you on your journey so far? What have you...
Oh, my gosh. The people have been delightful, delicious, amazing. Gosh, even from forming it. Like, I would call people out of the blue that were experts on things that I didn't know, because putting this event together, even though I had past careers that helped me, there were still huge pockets where I'm like, I have no idea how to do this. So I would literally find an expert.
Oh, we have a call. Hold that thought. Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina and Ali Spatz-DeLazar.
Yes, hi, Dr. Nina. This is Larry from Burbank. How are you?
Hi, Larry from Burbank.
Hi, Larry.
Hello, hello. I've got a question about, I sound like Mr. Freud, my mother.
She
pushes food on me.
She what?
Pushes food on me, mostly junk food and lots of it, on a pretty regular basis, even though I keep asking her to stop. How can I get her or make her stop, or what can I do just on my side of the fence?
This one's to you. But I hear her pushing love on you.
You accept that the mother, he has told her he doesn't want it.
Yep.
So you can't make her stop, unfortunately, but you can change the way that you experience it or respond. Because if you have a person who is pushing junk food on you and you have told that person, do not do this, please, and that person continues to do it, that is not love. There's something intrusive and a little bit possibly hostile about that. So you can't make that change, that person change. As Freud said, if it's not one thing, it's your mother.
I like that.
So what do you do with the feelings that you have when she does this, and how do you respond? How do you take care of yourself?
I've tried throwing food out, and that's sort of with her like gas on a fire. Mm. But I think that it has to come, as you say, from within. It's my perception of her use of food as a weapon, and I believe that's the case.
How is it? Can you help me with how it's a weapon?
I'm sorry, say again?
Can you help me understand how it's a weapon?
You know, Dr. Nina mentioned you know, hostility instead of love.
Ah.
And I think that, that as she's gotten older and older, she's lost control of so much. But being, my guess is, a compulsive overeater for a lifetime, she uses that to wrest some control, what little control is left. That's just a hunch.
It's, I'm going to do what I want, even though you tell me. I'm going to give you what I want to give you, even if you tell me you don't want it.
Right. Her hostility looks like nurturing. Yeah, I think that the best way she nurtures me, at least, is through this. I mean, I've told her that what would change food to cocaine, and I'm a coke addict. How good is that? And it's like I'm talking to my shoes. She just blanks out and it offers me another Twinkie.
Larry, what I'm hearing is that she has no attunement to you whatsoever.
Right. No.
And to mourn that, yeah.
That's true, yeah. So,
would it be okay?
I can't change her, and I just got to change my attitude about
Larry,
what's going on. Yeah.
I don't know if this will help, and I don't know if it's applicable, but I'm going to offer it anyway. The way that the little snippet I heard, it could be, too, that she may not have the vocabulary to be able to express love in the way that you would be able to take it in, and to be able to maybe see that part of it may help kind of soften you inside at how you see her, because sometimes you can see our parents a little more like little kids, because sometimes they get limitations that we didn't realize.
Yeah.
Does that help at all?
It makes sense. As you speak, I'm guessing more hugs will drop off the food temptation. This is another hunch.
Oh.
So just sort of substituting her forcing food on me and giving hugs, sharing hugs, that could really help.
But I also think it's important to recognize that there are two communications here. One is this may be her only vocabulary for showing love.
Right.
But the other is she is clearly depicting a lack of listening, not only a lack of listening to you, but an intrusive element towards you. We have to recognize that in people who are supposed to love us, sometimes they act in a hateful way, and to own both. I mean, I guess accept both, that there is love there, and there is anger, some kind of hatred that's coming out in the same act of giving you food you don't want.
You know, since my dad died, I've seen this ramp up, so I don't think that's coincidence.
Yeah. Good observation.
People
tell me that I look a lot like old Morris. Don't believe it, but you know, she must see that in me and my brother. If I look at the calendar, there's really no question about that, actually.
Wow.
So is she treating you as she treated him? Is she trying to find him in you?
When he was slipping, he was diabetic, and the last thing he needed was sugar, and she would come back with ice cream and cookies and just give it to him. You know, it was even worse with him, but I think there was probably more hostility toward him, but it's kind of reflected on me in a sort of a diluted form, but still not insignificant, you know?
Yes, because you remind her of him, she's treating you as if you were him. I think that's very, very insightful and reflective, and you know, when you realize that, then you can take steps to, what Allie said, self-protect yourself. She's not going to change because she has some kind of hostility within, for want of a better word, that's coming out at you. She's not able to reflect from what I'm hearing. She's just reacting. So your job is to protect yourself. And if you throw the food out and she gets upset, oh, well.
One time, the most recent time, she said, "Would you like some cookies?" with a laugh, knowing that I was trying to clean up my food. And I said, "Mom, I know what you're doing. I know what you're doing." And that kind of paralyzed her for my benefit. I hate to do that, but that's better than being paralyzed and then eating out of my paralysis with sugar.
Yeah. Right. So that tells you that you can. That laugh shows that she knows what she's doing on some level, and the way that you set that boundary. And I'm on to you, Mom. This is not going to happen. So that's you. That's what you have to do even more of. And give up the hope that she's going to change. All you can do is change the way you respond to her.
Slightly different perspective. Laugh could have also been nervousness because it represents love. She actually asks you. And so maybe you're onto it with the hugs. If that's not too intrusive or invasive and you feel safe with it, that might be a heck of an experiment.
Yeah. It feels strange to me, but I think that alone, independent of food, is something I need to look at again on my side of the fence. So, I mean, that's both of them, things to realize that it's not about changing her and maybe substitute hugs and listening more, and I may get less, sabotage from her.
Well, Larry, please keep us posted. Keep me posted. Let us know how it goes. I have another call. So I'm going to say...
I'm good.
Okay. Thanks
Bye,
so
Larry.
Much. Bye, Larry.
Good to go. Thank you very much.
Oh, bye. Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Whoop. Okay. Well, we only have a few minutes left. I don't know what happened to that next caller. Larry, sorry to kind of cut you off a little bit abruptly. I felt like I did a little bit abruptly. I'm sorry. And the person who was calling in, I don't know what happened, but please call back next week since we only have a couple minutes. And I want to make sure that Allie tells us about the upcoming Shake It event at Staples Center. It's not going to be at 3rd Street Promenade this year.
That's right, Nick. It's not at 3rd Street this year. one of our beautiful souled dancers does halftime shows, and she took it over and offered it to the L.A. Sparks and so for a halftime at the L.A. Sparks. Yes?
Hold that thought, Allie.
Sure.
Hi, caller. This is Dr. Nina.
Hi. Hello. This is Christina calling. Hi, Dr. Nina. And is it Allie?
Yes. Hi, Christina.
Hello. Oh, I just was compelled to call in, and I'll try to be succinct. I listened to Larry and identified so much with him, and I loved your topic on self-acceptance. So where I'm at right now is I've had an eating disorder off and on, finally decided to really try to address it, and I am in the process of uncovering all kinds of things with my family that I didn't realize were so harmful and dysfunctional in terms of, you know, how I was brought up. And it is so painful. I feel that digging into this is making my symptoms worse. And I don't know, I want to stick with this and continue, but it is so incredibly painful. Do you have any advice as to how to make this less painful? Or it's just, it feels like it's not working only because my symptoms at times are getting worse than when I buried everything away.
Which is exactly what happens, which is why I always recommend that people, when they start treatment or get to this level, that they are going to therapy at least a minimum of twice a week. Twice a week individual therapy, because that is enough. That is probably the minimum to kind of contain what's coming up and to make you feel held. So if you're not in individual treatment, then I would suggest that you do that. If you let me know where you are or write to me, I can certainly recommend some people. But I just want to normalize it, that is what happens, because an eating disorder or whatever is going on with food is a way of coping and distracting so that you're not thinking about painful, uncomfortable history. And now that it's sort of coming out, it might feel like a volcano coming just when it's too much.
Exactly. And the hard part, like with Larry, is it's hard dealing with, you know, the parent who is not supportive and they're continuing that same behavior. And I think that's where I'm at right now. But food for thought.
Okay. Christina, we only have a minute left, so I'm going to... I am going to leave you with that. And again, feel free to contact me and I can help set you on the right path. I want to give Allie a chance to let us know about, to finish telling us about the event.
Super simple.
Oh, absolutely.
And Christina,
and
there is hope.
I appreciate taking my time, my call.
And Christina, there is hope.
And there are ways to learn how to tolerate those emotions. Yes.
Right.
You can do this.
You can. We're here for you.
Thank you so much for the inspiration. Okay. I really appreciate it.
Keep going with the, you know.
Okay, will do. Okay, take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
Listen, I can do this in 30 seconds. www.shakeitforselfacceptance.com, and it will tell you about the event this year. We still have a few dancing spaces left. We're actually getting really close to so awesome. We're getting close to being full. And then if you just want to come watch the Sparks game, the Sparks are all about empowerment. So it was such a nice pairing, and we're so fortunate that we've been able to connect and been able to make this happen for the halftime. So that said, if you want to go to the game and just support and support self-acceptance, there's a link there. You can buy a ticket through Shake It. Sitting in the section.
Tell us the date.
July 13th. Yes, it is a weekday in downtown LA. And then if you want to dance, all the details are on there. Please read everything because it is a little complicated, but it's super awesome.
Thank you, Allie. Thank you so much for being here today. I feel so inspired just by our conversation, and I'm sure that everyone out there feels the same. I'm here every Wednesday at 10 a.m. Pacific here on LA Talk Radio to give you the skinny on weight loss without dieting. We will see you next week.
Go dance. Shake it for self-acceptance.
Woo-hoo! Shake it!
You're listening to The Dr. Nina Show with Dr. Nina Savelle-Rocklin, only on LA Talk Radio.